The first bill to establish federal penalties for lynching, was introduced in 1918. That bill and more than 200 other attempts in Congress to curb mob violence targeting African Americans failed to become law. But before the holidays, the Senate voted unanimously to make lynching a federal crime.
The bipartisan Justice for Victims of Lynching Act was introduced by Senators Kamala Harris, Tim Scott, and Cory Booker. Here's Booker speaking about the bill on the Senate floor.
The passage of this bill is a recognition of that dark past. We know that when wrongs are ignored, they fester underneath the skin of the body politics, and we know that justice delayed is justice denied.
Chad Dion Lassiter is a national expert on race relations and the executive director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. Chad, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Can you start off by giving our listeners a sense of the human cost that lynching and mob violence has had for African Americans?
Well, it's played a tremendous, it's had a tremendous impact on the identities as well as the emerging identities of African Americans in America. When we look at Billie Holiday, when she articulated in her song Strange Fruit, which ironically was written by a Jewish school teacher, we're talking about that stored history, that past in which it's a dark side, that shadow of hate that put black bodies on display. And it wasn't just lynching, but it was also a ritual that ended up engaged with the lynching. It was almost like a rites of passage. Let's lynch, let's come to the central catchment area, and the townspeople would come. And so it's part of that dark history, it's part of that dark past. And when we ask the question, Socratically and otherwise, why has it taken so long? We have to be able to respond by simply articulating that change in America is not only painfully slow, but oftentimes purposefully slow.
You know, there have been hundreds of attempts at passing federal anti-lynching legislation of some sort, and you talked about the fact that it took a long time for this to pass. What were some of the high-profile efforts that ended up not succeeding?
Well, we know of the efforts of Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, who was the founder of the Niagara Movement, mm-hmm. with some of his Jewish colleagues that morphed into the NAACP. We also know that he brought attention to this through the Crisis magazine. We also know that Ida B. Wells was an anti-lynching crusader who brought attention to this. And we know that these were times where white supremacy was running rampant. It was unacknowledged, it was unchecked, and it was part of the institutional policies of prejudice plus power, which gave us institutional racism. Racism maintained by the government at that time. And so these efforts really went on deaf ears. You had organizations like I mentioned before, the National Association of Advancement for Colored People. You had the National Association of Colored Women. You had the Association for Southern Women for the Prevention of Lynching. And then you had the Dyer anti-lynching bill that was proposed in 1920. And so now we look at that historical trajectory and we come to this contemporary era. And I won't say that those efforts fell. I would say those efforts, even though it's 100 years later, served as a catalyst for us to get to this point.
Chad Dion Lassiter is a national expert on race relations and the executive director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. And we're talking about the Senate voting unanimously, bipartisan, to make lynching a federal crime. Chad, even though laws may not have gotten passed, you know, there have been other African-American activists. You talked about W.E. Du Bois and others who have been working for well over 100 years to make this issue and continue to make it visible in front of people. What are some of the other ways they continue to do that?
Through their writings, through their lecturings, building coalitions with their Jewish colleagues. You had the abolitionist movement bringing attention to it, protesting, civil disobedience, things of that nature. We know that when we look at historical incidents like Rosewood, when we look at incidents of, Mississippi and things of that nature, these were individuals who were committed to seeing the humanity of what they were called at that time Negroes, but what we see now in the contemporary is African Americans. And so in seeing that humanity, one of the things they wanted to do is bring attention to it. Oftentimes, the history books never really articulates those individuals who lost their lives, who were white on the other side of the color line, fighting on behalf of, you know, blacks, mm-hmm. and trying to really highlight their humanity. And so one of the things that we have to look at is that it's similar to the apology for slavery so many years later. It's symbolic, but it also, this bill will allow us in this emboldened era that displays with xenophobia, homophobia, Islamophobia, white terrorism, white supremacy, and institutional racism, that if a lynching was to take place now, we have the federal backing to go after the people and not just condemn them, but with the law on our side as an instrument of justice and change, we can actually, you know, do some things from a punitive standpoint.
Now, a mob lynching is usually about a lot more than just murder. Can you talk about the social function that lynchings have played in America?
Yes. Well, it could be the perception of someone looking at you the wrong way. So even though Emmett Till, that lynching was maybe not with the noose, which is a symbol and stain of hatred, and maybe it didn't have the Confederate flag, but Emmett Till, who was the African-American young man from Chicago, comes down to Mississippi. It was alleged on one side that he, whenever he got nervous, he stuttered, and his mother asked him to whistle because that would calm him down. The other side was that he whistled at a white woman, and that was just tantamount to, you know, leading into, you know, the potential of lynching. Well, his lynching occurred on the back of a boat in the Mississippi River, and his face was charred by the, you know, the boat motor and things of that nature. We've also seen in the contemporary, if you look at some of the things that have happened now in the Me Too movement, when women are coming forward against powerful men, and because of male privilege, the women who have been victims of sexual harassment oftentimes are castigated, or we're told, well, that really didn't happen, or why did it take all this time to happen? And so we see a high-tech lynching through the media, similar to what we saw with regards to Anita Hill when Clarence Thomas was being confirmed. And so in the social context of that, it may not be the physical thing of nooses, but it's the way we defame people's characters, the way that we negate people's narratives, whether it be transphobia, homophobia, or xenophobia.
You talked about Emmett Till and what made him a target. What were some of the other things that usually precipitated a lynching or made someone a more likely target?
Well, it's just the reign of white supremacy and racial terror and white supremacy. So if you look at Rosewood as a case example, in Rosewood, it was a white woman who claimed that a black man raped her when actually she was two-timing. That's the terminology they used at that time. She was having a relationship outside of the confines of her marriage, but a whole town burned. And Tulsa, it was a similar accusation of a black man raping a white woman. There's a story that we oftentimes don't talk about in our modern-day politics, but it was the Ballad of Leo Frank. Leo Frank was a Jewish individual who actually was lynched because it was alleged that he actually raped a white woman. And so these things were precipitated simply by falsehoods, alternative facts, if you will, erroneous data. It could be a glare, it could be a stare, or it could just be the mere fact that there were individuals who had some inferiority problems, but they wanted to pretend like they were superior. So it's the church burnings, it's the cross burnings, it's the long-stored history of the shadow of hate of the Ku Klux Klan that were against Jews, that were against African-Americans and others.
You talked about Tulsa, and you also talked about Rosewood as well. Why were politicians from southern states so resistant to anti-lynching laws? Was it merely just to keep the support of white southern voters, or was it about something else?
I think it's both ends. You raise a great question. I think it was to keep the support of the white southern voters, but it also was the maintaining of the system of white supremacy. You know, parts of our democracy profited from white supremacy and institutional racism, denying the vote of individuals. And then also it was used as a fear-mongering tactic. If you could lynch a person, that would keep other individuals in line as it relates to segments of the population that may wanted to revolt. And so when you lynch them, it was just gruesome. And not only did it come at the expense of just solely a lynching, but oftentimes individuals had their body parts, you know, castigated, and then they were actually used as props and things of that nature. And so it was definitely fear. It was definitely not having the moral compass or the moral imperative to do the right thing. We heard the same thing with the storied history and the original sin of our democracy, as explained in slavery, by simply saying, well, you know, it wasn't the right time to free slaves. And so it's the same thing with lynching. White Southerners wanted to keep them maintaining status quo. You wanted to keep the division for them not to see the humanity of their neighbors, i.e. blacks. And so then you had politicians who maintained the status quo of white supremacy of that era.
We have less than 3 minutes, so I just have just a couple more questions for you. We talked a lot about what went on in the South, but do Northern states share in this responsibility too?
I think we all do. You raise a great question. I think that a lot of us were implicit by standing by and not doing the things that we needed to do as it relates to advocating. So we look at it as a Southern phenomenon, but we have enough data that shows that lynchings took place in places like Delaware and elsewhere. And so I think, once again, it doesn't become an either-or, but it becomes a both-and. There were Northern leaders. There were Southern leaders who stood by. I think the relevance in 2018 is that this federal law puts us in a position to look at this emboldened era that we find ourselves. And I think that for the United States of America, we still have a lot of work to do as it relates to that reckoning of the history of violence towards African Americans and others in our democracy.
Yeah, and that was actually a question I was going to ask you. And just to expand on that, what kind of things do you think that the United States has to do when it comes to dealing with African Americans? Not just this lynching and making it a federal crime, but what are some of the other things that you think in a minute or less that we need to reckon with?
Certainly, in a minute or less, I think that we have to deal with the historical underpinnings. We have to look at the generational trauma. We need to also make sure we do coalition building. At one particular point in time, our Jewish and African-American communities were strong. We have to get back to that. I think from a policy standpoint, we have to look at mass incarceration. We have to look at educational apartheid. We have to look at economic injustice. And there are a lot of other challenges that we have as well. The way that we see not just mass incarceration, but police brutality by some white officers and some black officers, where we negate people's humanity and we're shooting them unarmed, and then we're getting off with impunity. So I think that beyond apologies, this bill goes a long way, but we also have to have a frank conversation about the impact of institutional racism, not just on African Americans, but on people of color, and it also disadvantages whites. And so I think it's time to call for a national conversation that moves from theory to practice here in our democracy.
Chad, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Chad Dion Lassiter is a national expert on race relations and the executive director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. He was with us to talk about the significance of Congress voting to make lynching a federal crime.